Zero Update for February 11th, 2018. I am Filippo D'Onofa.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Deandre Victoria.
I'm Chris Sologi.
I'm Teresa Sammons.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
Yeah.
Everyone's here today.
Yeah. I brought in the whole support cast, which is good because I probably still sound like kind of crap. But yeah.
Probably feel like kind of crap. How are you doing?
Better than last week. Last week I felt like death probably would have been a better alternative to hosting a show. So yeah, so that's an improvement. Still got, you know, a few lingering side effects going on, but hopefully within the week or so that'll probably pass and I should be good as new again. So
that's good.
Yeah, so that was pretty much, you know, what I've been playing this week is the Feeling Sick game.
That's not a good game.
No, it's got a very steep difficulty curve. Yeah, and very little in the way of controller support.
Not very rewarding either.
No. So, but you do want to beat it because, the alternative is, death. So.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
Also not recommended.
What have you been up to, Pat?
Site development game, still plotting out some World Warriors stuff. Getting some ideas in place for launch day editorial output. Other than that, it's been the same Super Turbo, Arcade Edition, Street Fighter V, Dissidia, Dragon Ball FighterZ, that I was playing last week, and it's a good rotation that is serving me quite well right now. So, pretty close to arriving at verdicts of all three of those new releases.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'm just having a really good time playing them right now.
Yeah. Cool.
So that's been my week.
That's what they want you to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know where I was going with that.
Yeah, I give them some of my money and I get enjoyment in return.
Yeah.
So I am still playing Xenoblade Chronicles 2. I am now officially starting Chapter 9, which means after this I've only got the last chapter to go. Shit has officially hit the fan as far as the plot goes. But if you remember the sort of last couple of chapters of what the first Xenoblade was like, it's pretty much on that scale.
Do you have to have played the first Xenoblade to enjoy 2?
No, not really. They're connected, but the connection is sort of deep lore and not, like, extremely... It's not extremely right. Integral. You kind of have to go looking for the connections.
Okay, because I have this thing where I don't want to play games unless I played the one before it. But like I've seen Xenoblade, and I'm like, man, there's no way I can go back to Xenoblade 1 on the Wii or the 3DS.
Yeah.
But Xenoblade,
I have the same problem, and I haven't played it yet.
Yeah. So, which is ironic because I could go back and play old PlayStation 1 games, but yeah.
I can't do that either.
You're a terrible person, Darren, that's why.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt, Brandon. I was just curious, because that's on my list to pick up. So, and I've heard you talking about it the last couple of times we've done the show, so I was curious.
Yeah, it's good. It's definitely worth playing. Just two things you kind of have to get used to is that obviously you do have a choice between the dubbed and the Japanese audio. The dubbed is good, just, you know, get ready to just know right off the bat that the mouth movements don't really match, like, at all. And also that there are some odd choices in the voice acting department that are kind of off-putting at first, but nothing too serious. But other than that, I've also been playing Warframe. Because it's basically Destiny 2, only it's free and it doesn't suck. And that's about it.
Yeah. It looks like it's a game that's progressed quite a bit since it launched.
It is now that they got the free, they've got the big massive open world section now. The game itself has grown exponentially since it started. And as far as like free to play goes, they're probably the one company that does it better than pretty much any other game currently out there. Even Jim Sterling, of all people, has had very little to complain about.
Yeah.
Other than that, really my only big gaming thing is getting ready for Kingdom Come Deliverance, which I'm going to be reviewing.
Yeah.
Still haven't gotten a review code and not sure if we're getting one, but
doesn't look like it at this point.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So, Dan, what about you?
Oh, yeah. As I am speaking, I am also playing Dragon Ball FighterZ, which has probably been one of the main reasons why I am behind in almost everything I want to do for the site. mainly playing Lost Sphere. Yeah, I'm currently in arena matches because for some reason these matches are hard to come by, and I'm really trying to platinum this game. So, yeah, there's that. I've grown accustomed to using Android 18, and yeah, it's still as fun as it was when I first got it. And what sucks is my friends and I made a pact to get it, and I've never played with any of them yet. So that's kind of frustrating.
Time to get new friends, buddy.
Yeah. On that note, I was also convinced to get Monster Hunter on Monday, and I'm also having a lot of fun with that. I already have 18 hours logged into it. And I knew that this game was going to be a time crunch or a time lapse or whatever you want to call it.
But they're called time sinks, Dan Red.
Oh, yeah, they're called time sinks. There you go. So, yeah, I can't even find the words right now. And I just killed Beerus. Cool. Anyway, yeah, it's really solid so far. There's quite a bit of a learning curve, mainly because you have all these menus and all these nuances and all these things that the game has been known for. And on top of that, it's also the most approachable, mainly because like it's finally available in like HD console form. Not everyone's playing it on a handheld, and
that needed to happen.
Yeah, and to help ease that burden, when you go into like any sort of hunt, you can actually call upon people that you're assigned in. That you're signed in with, and all of a sudden they'll help you out. Like, I was going against this really tough monster, and all of a sudden Japanese people joined my game, and they know their shit. So I was able to get through those pretty easily. There have been some cases where the connections have been jumpy, and it must have been really complicated considering, like, this and Dragon Ball has been really popular, and PSN has been done a lot lately. So that's been kind of an issue. But otherwise, yeah, this is some solid gaming, and with Secret of Mana coming out next week, it doesn't look like it's going to be any slower. So, yeah.
Have you secured your hard copy?
Of Secret of Mana?
Yeah.
I did. Yeah, I put $5 on it on GameStop a few days ago.
Wait, there's a hard copy?
Yeah, GameStop exclusive.
Only available at GameStop, though. Which is
good. Shit!
Yeah.
Actually, I like my GameStop. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, the only thing with that is you can't get 20% off, but you know, deal with it. But
I hope that doesn't suck.
I really hope so too, just for the sake of it.
I love Secret of Mana. I hope this
Secret
doesn't
of Mana
suck.
Is great. Secret of Mana is great. Like I hope that whatever was done to Crash was done to this. So yeah.
Yeah, because that's why I want to play with my kid too. So.
All right, what about you, Chris?
So I've also been playing Monster Hunter World, and I got that this morning and have been enjoying it a lot. I'm still pretty early in it, as I'm just starting to get into some of the side quest stuff. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's definitely a lot easier to play compared to some of the earlier entries. The last one I really dug into was whatever version of Tri was on the Wii U. Which was definitely kind of disappointing not having any more until now. On a console at least. Because the 3DS just was not a fun way to play it. But yeah, this one does a lot of the same stuff really well. Adds a lot of new things to help smooth over some of the rough edges that the series has had. There's still some still there. But yeah, it's a lot less perplexing in some ways. Because I remember having, when I pre-ordered that Wii U game, they gave you one of the guides for free. It's like an e-book version on whatever Prima's app was. And so that one I would have to actually go into, like, okay, I need this specific item for this thing I want. What the hell has it? Where is it on the map? All that sort of stuff. And I had to look it up that way. And this one, it's much easier to figure that stuff out. They have a good little guide inside of it, sort of show you what the enemies will drop. You know, what can drop if you, for instance, like, cut off their tail on some of these monsters, or you know, break their head. Is it just shows different statuses for some of these things. It does a real good job of giving you more information. It's not all the information you might want, but it's, for the most part, is there. So you're not as reliant on, you know, wikis and guides and all that. I've been mainly using the, what they call Switch Axe, which is basically, it's like a Bloodborne item where it's kind of an axe that can transform into a long sword. And you kind of charge energy in it as you're using it as an axe. So when you transform it into the sword, it has like an elemental boost to its attacks. That is pretty cool to be able to do. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to putting some more time into it. And I've also been playing some more Hitman, mainly on the PS4, going back for some of the trophies and such I haven't gotten yet, which have mainly just doing a lot of the opportunities in the later stages, which is sort of bringing to light some more of the cool things that are in there. So yeah, there's one character who, in the Colorado map, who has OCD, so and this opportunity has you kind of just fuck with a couple of things that he looks at, and sort of just drives him nuts. And gives you a couple opportunities to just take him out. And some cool stuff like that. One involved poisoning one of the people on that map as well. There's just a bunch of stuff in there, and just been sort of grinding it out a bit. Just checking out some of these other alternate ways of taking out some of these people, which is always fun. And that's been kind of it. How about you, Teresa?
I have been not gaming as much as I should have, but still finding a little bit of time to work on Breath of the Wild. I'm kind of putting that down for just a little bit.
Put it down for the rest of your life. It would be worth it.
No, put it down that way. but I've also been playing some Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, and that's pretty cool. I've unlocked a couple of new things, but you know, car-wise and outfit-wise, but I haven't unlocked any new tracks yet, so I've got to work on that a little bit more. Still Pokemon Go. I was out catching some more Pokemon. They released a few more new ones, so got to get all that shit done.
I thought Mario Kart 8 Deluxe had everything packed in already. There's no need to unlock tracks.
I thought there were some.
You have to unlock them.
Yeah.
They're just, you don't have to buy any DLC.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
The DLC is just added to the stuff that you unlock.
Yeah. It's fun, though. You know, I'm not really taking advantage, I guess, of any kind of crazy controller setup or anything with the Joy-Cons. I just put them in the little, put them in this little frame and, you know, good to go. Mm. But most of my stuff has been casual gaming because, you know, everybody's been sick. So, you know, feel great. And I've just been sitting around playing fucking Uno constantly. It's just really bad.
It's like OG status right there.
Right.
I just saw GameStop has an exclusive Zelda Uno, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to buy that pack.
Is it in a tin?
I don't know, but it's $8, so I figure why not.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of our weird collecting things is we collect Uno sets that are in tins that we like, not everything. Mm. Oh, no Thomas the Train shit. But
Thomas!
Nothing! I'm just done with his ass. You can only...
You better not hear anything bad out of you about Bob the Builder, or we will fight.
Ah, yes we can. but I've been playing 100% Orange Juice and 100% not knowing what I'm doing because I refuse to play the tutorial, which is like some weird-ass collectible card game plus Mario Party. So it's kind of funny. You know, if you see it for free or something on Steam, it's worth a go. But that's really about it for me. What have you been up to, Lee?
Well, that's a long story. So this past week, let me adjust my mic. This past week, I had a pretty crazy thing happen with my dog. So I swear to God, I had I was up 52 hours. I'm not going to get into what happened with my dog. She's okay now. She's laying next to me. She's chilling. But, and then I was sick the previous week, just like you, just like you, Phil. It was nasty. I didn't enjoy it. So I was thinking, okay, I'll use this time to play some games. Yeah, wrong. So I haven't had much time to do anything. I've just done, I'll occasionally pick up WoW. I've been playing Hearthstone a little bit with my kid and just whooping his ass because that's how he's going to learn. We go hard in this house. I was trying to hack his 3DS, which there's the people doing this stuff now. You got to have a magnet to put the thing in sleep mode and everything. I can't imagine how people come up with this shit. But anyway, the only thing that I've really put any time into is Shadow of the Colossus. And, I don't really write reviews anymore, but I'm going to be doing a review for this. Hopefully I have it done in the next 2 days. And I definitely got some thoughts about it. I think we're really similar in the sense that a lot of games that I play are sort of the same loop in the sense that it's easy for me to pick up and to put down. I find that just with the way that my life is structured, I don't have the patience for a lot of games that are going to waste a shit ton of my time up front. The reason that I can keep playing WoW is because I've had so much time invested in it. I don't need to learn anything new. So I can get in, I can play stuff, and even if I'm playing 10 or 20 minutes, I can get something enjoyable out of it, or I can play, for a few hours with my wife. That's something we can do together. So, that's one of the reasons why WoW never really is out of my game rotation. Because of that, I don't really get to play as much. And, I watch my son play things here and there, but I pretty much stick to kind of the same stuff. And But with Shadow of the Colossus is an interesting thing to kind of run across because I played the hell out of that game when it was first released on PlayStation 2. I did not really play the version on PS3 because I felt like I had gotten, the experience that I would have wanted out of that game. But having now revisited it on the PS4, it's interesting to me in a way that, one of the things that we've talked about for a long time, and I'm gonna put all this in the review, so I'll keep it relatively short, but, one of the things that we've talked about a lot, or I know that I have especially, because it's one of my things, is just sort of the language of games, the way the games teach you how they actually work, and the way that so many of these systems are interconnected and sort of create this, I hesitate to say piece of art because there are many games that are not art. I definitely would say Shadow of the Colossus is. But it's so much what's interesting about it is it's almost anachronistic in that it's very much a product of its time. But I feel like especially having gone back to it, that I want those times to return, and not because of a sense of nostalgia or anything else like that, but more that I feel like a great deal of the games that I've played in the last 5 years, for lack of a better term, are an incredible waste of time in the sense that there's layers upon layers of stuff that you need to learn, and then, you only use that one thing for 5% of the game. Games are so chock full of collectibles and things that make you run around, and you don't actually get anything for that. And Shadow of the Colossus really doesn't work that way. It really is more of a really singular vision of, there are these 16 bosses, and the bosses themselves are the puzzle and the action and everything else like that. They work in tandem with one another, and it's got sort of this kind of broken elegance to it, which you just don't see too often in games in general. And it really has me thinking a lot, and this will be stuff that I also put in the review, but it really has me thinking a lot of why games clicked with me previously and why I feel like a lot of stuff doesn't now. And it's an interesting game to re-experience, particularly which just for the record, the overhaul that they did to it is stunning. I mean, that game was beautiful before, but it's something else entirely. Like, the best way I could describe it would be like if any of you guys had an old favorite movie of yours that you watched on videotape and then you jumped to Blu-ray. Like, it's like that dramatic shift with like the what you see. Even just like individual hair follicles on the Colossi, there's so much detail there that just kind of again fleshes out the world when the world itself doesn't really speak that much. It's everything's done through visual cues and contextual stuff. So it's interesting having played that again, because now I really want to see more of these older style games brought back that I felt like just weren't that interested in wasting your time. I feel like they got to the point a lot more, which I feel
actually,
like
most you know what? You mentioned that, you know, there's no collectibles. They added a new collectible mechanic in the game.
Right, but it's not a focal point. As far as I know, it doesn't do anything.
I don't think anyone's gotten all of them yet.
I think it just happened last night.
Oh,
it's a specific type of sword that you get, and it opens up this little neat little area in the temple. But it's not anything you need, and it's more of right just now. This is a cool thing that I got at the end of my journey in this game.
Right. So sort of like those extra dungeons that they added in the Final Fantasy remix.
Yeah, that's not really a dungeon. Okay. Just like here's a neat little trophy I got as a result of this thing.
So, which is, that's funny you mentioned that, because that's one of the, to me, that feels like one of those insulting things. Like, you did all this work, and you get this thing in this game that doesn't mean shit. But anyway.
Here's your t-shirt.
Exactly. I collected like 80 of these things, and all I got was a stupid fucking t-shirt. That's all Assassin's Creed's fault, though. Like, GTA did it, but Assassin's Creed made it awful. But anyway, the collectibles I'm not a big fan of. I knew they were there. But I just didn't know. I didn't know what they did, and it wasn't anything that I decided to pursue because it doesn't add anything to the game with those there. Like in some other open world games, like I feel like one of the reasons they put collectibles out there is to get you to actually walk around in the world that they design. But that you don't need to do that here. So anyway, I'll lay it all out in my review. But it's been a very interesting experience. And I don't know if anybody else will feel the same way that I do, but it has been something interesting to revisit simply because it does remind me of a lot of things that I really did love about gaming when I was younger. And it kind of illuminates the reason why I have such an issue getting into so many things that are modern.
All right. Fair enough. Okay, so we got some games coming out this week. I think we've touched on them already. It's Kingdom Come Deliverance and Secret of Mana, both of which are coming out, I believe, on Tuesday. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're waiting for those, got some RPG fun to get in on.
Oh, I see on PSVR, Drunken Bar Fight.
Okay.
Mm. It's a,
I don't need to do that in VR, boys.
It's a really stupid game. I've seen Giant Bomb play on Vive, which... The people that are not playing it are seeing like a third-person view, like a security camera kind of view, and it's very kind of broken in a sense that it's all about physics, just fighting other dudes that are in this bar. They're just kind of hanging out, but until you like fuck with them, they don't engage with you.
Mm.
But also, it doesn't animate your body well because you know you're not actually tracking your legs or anything.
Yeah.
So it just kind of has that kind of brokenness to like trying to figure out, okay, here's your hands, here's your head, and
okay, your hips.
We're going to try to figure out how to animate the rest of you to figure
could
out
that what... brokenness be because you're drunk.
I mean, you can add that to it. Yeah. You can throw, you know, chairs at people, beer, you can just sit there and I don't know, just like spank them, all this weird little fight shit. It's It's a dumb, fun little thing.
You can spank him now? This is going in a direction I didn't expect.
Yeah, this just took a weird
turn. Not like on the butt, but just like
spankers. Well, now I don't want to play.
No, I have not played it to know if there's that much depth in there. But now there's like a,
I don't know
like
how much depth there is bar. Smacking him, but...
Yeah, it's like a traditional bar scene. It's like a wedding...
I've been in many a bar fight in my time, and I've never seen that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, drunken bar fight coming out this week.
I'm going to have to make that my pick of the week.
All right, so we'll move on to the shrapnel. Some of these will probably take a little bit longer than others. We'll start off with the first one, because... This got some weird reports. Apparently, some Microsoft person was talking, and they say, yeah, you know, we buy companies. Maybe we'll buy a big company, gaming-related. And the internet kind of went apeshit on it.
Kind of took on a life of its own.
Yeah. A lot of people started speculating that maybe Microsoft would be looking to buy EA.
Yeah, there's
people... It kind of had the telephone effect, like, oh, they're going to be buying EA.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's going on with this?
These are the same people who believed in the Megaton.
Yeah. So, that said, let's just play devil's advocate here, and let's just say they actually do. Think about the strategy that Microsoft has had previously for the past couple of years with what they've been doing. It's been all about client-focused. They're very much in on the multi-platform. So, assuming that Microsoft would buy a multi-platform publisher like EA, now they're publishing on PC, on Xbox, and on PlayStation 4. One of the speculations was that they would just buy EA and make them Xbox exclusive. That makes no goddamn sense at all.
That's why they won't do it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Actually, that's why they will do it.
No, but I'll tell you why. Hold on. This is important. Because I already know where you're going with this. Like, because the argument can be made, well, they're doing it with Minecraft and all these other things. Microsoft is had their ass handed to them this generation. And to your point, they definitely are looking at more about the consumer and where they can provide those products and things like that. The only way that I could see them buying EA, which I don't think that they will, number one, but the only reason that I could see this being a viable option for them would be if they stopped putting out these games on other platforms to give them an edge. And Microsoft's, like you said, it's almost like their business model is split, where they're down with multi-platform and everything else like that, but the PC isn't a competition for them. The PlayStation is, and maybe they could be looking at it like, well, we're bringing in money hand over fist, but... The other thing that I think would be important here is that when we're talking about crossplay, them buying EA doesn't help them at all because Sony won't let that shit happen. Sony doesn't want crossplay to exist.
Nope.
So it wouldn't make sense for Microsoft to buy a company like EA, have that portfolio and everything else like that, unless they wanted to make it exclusive or unless crossplay was happening across all platforms, in which case a sale for them would be a sale that would still strengthen their core market. But since the player bases are broken anyway, I just don't see how that financially makes any sense for them unless they're trying to get out of the hardware business, which they just doubled down on. So they don't gain anything from not making themselves stand out in the same way that Sony has, unless – their exit of the hardware market is what they want to do, and that doesn't seem like what they would want to do. And they would have a completely uncooperative partner in Sony because they could go, well, we could do FIFA. Like, we're making $3 trillion. You know, we could buy Bolivia and all these other places with the FIFA money, but – and we could make all of our – we could create this ecosystem where everybody plays together. And Sony's going to be like, nah, bro, that's not going to happen. That's why there's so many different ways about this that I think – it makes sense for them to buy him, but it doesn't make any sense for them to buy him.
Yeah. The only thing that would really stand out to me is if basically they bought the company and gutted the board. Basically just bought them for the IP.
Right, yeah, because this is the same EA that was like, so how bad can we fuck our customers?
Right.
And Microsoft, like we talked about before, Microsoft really seems to be in the mode of not wanting to do that to their customers.
Right. So,
yeah, like the difference between EA and Minecraft as far as the pushing it multi-platform is Minecraft is just one game. It's not. It probably does not take as much money to continue working on that as any of EA's games.
No, definitely not.
And so with EA buying that, if you're going to take it exclusive, you're going to lose a lot of those licenses, the sports licenses. Because I'm pretty sure those are all contingent on being released on as many platforms as they can.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when you take it exclusive, it's probably null and voiding that contract.
Yeah.
You'd have to sign a new one, and you're probably not going to get favorable terms.
Yeah.
When they realize, oh, we're not going to make money on, you know, the PS4, maybe the Switch, PC, where mobile, any of that stuff. And that's where you start losing a lot of that value as well. And going multi-platform, it just conflicts with the Xbox as the platform, as their platform. It's sort of just, now we got these, you know, 5 to 10 games a year we're releasing elsewhere. And sort of people already have a problem with Microsoft publishing their own stuff on PC as well. But also on PC, they'd be buying another platform in Origin.
I hadn't even thought about Origin, yeah.
Yeah. So now they'd have that competing with Windows Store. It's like, do you combine them? Because they've already got their own sort of Game Pass-like system over there with the Origin Access stuff.
Hmm.
And that just seems to make things a lot more complicated than an acquisition should be.
Yeah. Well, business deals like this are generally never simple. There's there's reasons for, there's reasons against. I don't know. This one really comes down to a toss-up. I don't think it's going to happen, but there are certainly reasons where it could.
Yeah, and I think maybe the other part of it that it comes down to as well is that really Microsoft acquiring EA doesn't really get them anything if they're going to continue to do business the way that they're doing it. If they want to be like, you know, cold-hearted and cutthroat and say, okay, fine, like to Chris's point, we'll put out FIFA, we'll put out Madden, we'll do all that on PS4. But Anthem, everything else like that, that's on our system. Mm. Like, that would make financial sense to me. But I can't get past the idea that there's that split there. You have to, like, if Sony was playing ball with games working cross-platform, I could see this working because then they could play to their strengths, you know? And if they owned EA, they could say, hey, look, there's going to be some exclusive stuff with our games on our platform. But if you don't want to buy in the ecosystem, we'll still take your money. You can still play on PS4 or wherever else you're playing. Like, I could see them doing that to not endanger the sports licenses and stuff like that. But beyond that, I mean, anything that EA has in the bag that's something they could turn into an exclusive like Anthem or something else like that, I could see that being a reason for Microsoft to do it. But it just seems... I mean, there just seems to be so many things that could happen here. Like you guys talked about with the board, what do you do with those people? Like those are groups of people that have made it well known that they have no problem fucking over anyone. Like that's their MO, you know?
I'm for throwing them out of the tallest window you can find.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. And sort of also in that rumor was Valve and PUBG Corp. It's like Valve also gets you another platform on the PC.
Valve, it's like, not a chance.
Yeah.
I think they'd have to do a hostile takeover of Valve. Valve is never going to be sure, why don't you just buy us? Yeah. That makes sense.
Gabe hates Microsoft with a purple passion.
He even had to come out and speak out against this. Like, that's how much people were talking about that part of it.
Although I can see them offloading their game development arm at some point.
Yeah, because they don't develop games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. PUBG Corp, though, that one is the one that does seem to make the most sense.
Yeah, though I think if PUBG Corp is smart, they would not do it. Because then they'd be foregoing sales on any other platforms.
No, apart from PC and Xbox.
Yeah, but they know that PS4 is going to be in the roadmap once they get this Xbox One version done.
Yeah.
And that's a ton more sales. They're seeing how Fortnite is doing in the wake of PUBG being exclusive to the Xbox. Fortnite is thriving to the point where they're getting so many people playing at once it's crashing their servers.
Mm.
I think 3.4 million people at once. and that just causes servers to collapse.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, here's the thing. So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, whereas PUBG just continues to have problems with cheaters. I think they announced in January they just banned over 1 million people. It's like there's tons of shooters out there that would kill to have 1 million people that they could ban.
You were going to say something, Andrew?
Yeah, so here's the thing. Like, every year at about the at about this time, these kinds of conversations happen, whether they're business or casual. These conversations usually happen because we're so near to GDC. There's always going to be some sort of, like, headline-grabbing acquisition title or whatever it may be. But the bottom line is here, it's definitely not going to happen. I think a more plausible situation would be Microsoft acquiring an EA studio, you know, whether it be BioWare, Motive, or DICE, something like that. That would be huge for them, especially with Games Pass and what they want to do with it. I mean, as far as exclusivity goes, there's just too many dollars on the table. EA is making a killing off of the PS4. I don't know if they want to support the Switch, but there's just no reason to sell to Microsoft at this point.
Yeah,
I could see them basically going for smaller mid-level or mid-level developers, not publishers. Because then they can get the one IP versus going for EA where it's like, okay, now you got two first-person shooters, you got, you know, Anthem plus, well, they don't really have anything competing with that outside of maybe Sea of Thieves, but it's like, now you got two racing series, Need for Speed and Forza.
Yeah.
Then it's like,
well, they're very There's different racing series.
Yeah.
Exist. But it's also, they're both kind of doing the open world racing thing. It's not taking itself too seriously.
Yeah.
Like, there's enough overlap there where it doesn't really make sense for them to go for the entire library.
All right, so I guess we'll leave it at there. It's probably not happening. So, worth thinking of anyway. Another thing that happened a couple of weeks back and we didn't get to talk about was Google's, he's security analyst over there at Google, Tavis Ormandy.
Did he say that Microsoft was going to buy Google?
Yeah, no. He decided he was going to start taking a look at online gaming platforms and see if there were vulnerabilities there. So the first one he took a look at was Blizzard's Battle.net.
Oh, shit.
Oh, boy! within a few minutes, he was able to get arbitrary code running on the client. So
that's not good.
No, that's not good.
Yeah, their Battle.net client is fucking dog shit.
Yeah. What's worse is Blizzard's response to him when he did make these brought this to his attention. At first, they were like, "Yeah, okay, we'll take a look," and then they went silent. Then Tavis, of course, went on Twitter, as he does. That certainly got their attention. And since then, it has been... Well, Blizzard released a fix that wasn't actually a fix, so that didn't help them much.
Mm-hmm.
So that didn't go well. But there is a silver lining in that now Blizzard and Tavis are talking about the next
year. So, none of this would have happened if Metzen was still around.
For those who don't know Tavis Ormandy, he is one of the premier vulnerability, researchers in the world. If he comes to you with something that he's found, take it seriously. Otherwise, he might just go and take a shower on you, and then that's where things get really bad, because that's where he does his best thinking, and yeah. just ask LastPass. That didn't go well for them either. But, LastPass is a stellar company, and they responded as they would. So, we'll keep an eye on those. I think he's taking on Steam now, and he hasn't quite found anything yet, so we'll see how long that lasts. So, in other news, rumor has it that Metroid Prime 4 is going to be developed by Bandai Namco Singapore's studio. Okay.
This corroborates a previous rumor that suggested that there was a certain Namco staffer working on both an unannounced Switch project and Ridge Racer 8. So
could potentially be the same project, but
no.
No.
Different. What if we got Ridge Racer 8 where you played as Samus in the ball and then you rolled around the racetrack?
That would be the dumbest thing ever, I think.
That might actually also be awesome, and you could drop bombs while you're doing it. You guys have no imagination.
No, I want Ridge Racer to be Ridge Racer.
Yeah. Well, no, you can still have, like, you can have an announcer yelling Ridge Racer.
No, just... that's not what makes.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Pardon me here, Pat!
The steam is rising from Pat's forehead right now.
Yeah, they tried that once to make a different kind of Ridge Racer. It didn't go
it
well.
It sucked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we don't know anything, whether this is actually true or not. The last time...
there are a lot of credible outlets reporting it, though.
Yeah. You know, it's not anything new. Namco and Nintendo have collaborated before, so this wouldn't be unheard of.
They haven't always been great partnerships, though.
Yeah, Star Fox.
Same with Assault.
Yeah, this is... it could be good. I mean, if Nintendo's confident enough to give one of their, you know, marquee properties to Bandai Namco to work on, chances are it's probably because they know the talent there and they're confident it's going to not turn into a clusterfuck. So,
whether there's any truth to the Metroid thing, and I think it's really possible considering in the job description he says first-person adventure, and Nintendo is literally the only company that ever used those two words together. I hope it would be like some sort of reboot rather than a Metroid Prime 4, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, we've already seen the 4 logo, so...
Yeah, well, I don't know.
But just because there's a 4 in the title doesn't mean it isn't a
reboot. That can easily change, yeah. So,
we will keep you updated on Metroid Prime 4. Switch is looking like it's going to get some really good titles in the next coming years, so...
Nintendo's keeping it rolling.
Yep. They're selling them just as quickly as they can make them. So, little quick note here: there's features for Sony's PS4 firmware 5.5 have been announced. Biggest one for PS4 Pro owners that use 1080p TVs is the ability to turn on super sampling for all games that have Pro support.
Damn.
So,
to figure out which games that benefits the most.
Yeah, because some games you'll take a frame.
I think I saw screenshots of Final Fantasy 12, and I cannot tell the difference, really.
No.
It's like, oh, the little trademark it's on there is a little bit brighter on the PS4 Pro, the super sampled version. It's like, but you don't see that in the game. It's like,
yeah.
It's like little specks, like, maybe? I don't know if that's different.
Yeah. It's supposed to be less jagged, so, yeah. You know, we'll see.
They also have better playtime management for parents that are doing the parental settings. So you can have it, and you can set up how much time, sort of playtime restrictions. So only playing for a set amount of time or within certain hours. You can have notifications set up so that the child knows, like, oh, your session's almost over.
Yeah.
So they can go save and quit or whatever. You can also manage stuff on the PC or smartphone, and you can just log them out if you need to.
Yeah.
So there's some good stuff there. They also did a lot of stuff to the library. So they added two new tabs. One for this PS4 lists all the applications that are installed with your name avatar, and the tab with your name avatar lists all the apps that or under your ID. So if there are, so if you have multiple people on the same one, you can tell who's belongs to who. As well as the other one is for PS Plus stuff. So you can be able to see, you know, which stuff is attached to the PS Plus account. You can also hide stuff. So if you have betas or demos, you don't want to be appearing on that stuff, you can turn that off.
Goddamn time.
Yeah, I also have stuff with the quick menu. You can manage your music a bit more easily. Shortcuts that they added to it. So if you're on Spotify, the square button serves as the shortcut for volume control. when you're on the media player, USB music player, triangle will work as the shortcut for player pause, and square button for volume control. And there's also background music you can use when you're playing PlayStation Now.
Danarin, calm down.
Yeah, they also added some more stuff for notifications. You can actually just delete them if you need to.
Yeah.
You just press triangle or the options button to delete them. Custom wallpaper, just stick a USB stick with the images on there. You can set that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Mm. They also have custom tournament team pages, so you can set up your own tournaments with friends. And so you're able to upload team logos and backgrounds sort of the same way. So you can set that stuff up pretty well, get all custom with it. And super sampling is in there.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like it's like boost mode where you have to turn it on just natively.
I saw Digital Foundry's video on it. You actually do have to go.
Okay. It's somewhere in settings.
Yeah, it's in display settings.
Okay. Yeah, I managed to get into this, but I obviously can't talk about it. So, yeah. Like, there's the one thing that's really all that interesting to me, and it's a thing that you have to really be paying attention to notice.
We'll find out about it.
And trying to figure out which of my games don't actually have PS4 Pro support.
Yeah.
To find out which ones actually get benefits from this stuff.
Yeah. So they're making improvements there.
Yeah.
You still can't change your PSN ID, so...
No. Yeah. But I'm not sure that that's necessarily tied to the firmware. That'd be like a thing to do on the website. Yeah. Just have to work on that.
Yeah. All right. So that's supposed to come out, was the end of February, they say it's rolling
out? I would say probably March.
Yeah.
Probably early March, I would guess. Hmm. I don't think they have a date yet for it.
Okay, so moving on, we have news that the public days for E3, they're going to be doing the same thing again as last
year. God damn it.
I don't know if Dan Reb or anybody else I know is going this year, but yeah, that's a thing.
This is definitely a deterrent.
Yeah, I signed up for a professional's pass, but if it's going to be 15,000 strong again, I'm like, probably not.
Yeah, you might have better.
I want to go to Bethesda's party, though.
Yeah. Wonder if it'll be Bethesda land again.
Yeah, they're not saying how many more are getting in here. They have that same bonus where the first 1,000 get it for $150, $250 after that. And you can spend $1,000 if you want to get in through business, the business pass. You get access to the VIP lounge. Catered breakfast and lunch each day.
Oh, well, just sign me up.
Access to the CEO developer panels and LA Live, the exhibit hall through a dedicated VIP entrance. All that good stuff.
All this sounds like a trip to Six Flags where they're just trying to fuck you with the price of everything. Like, you can avoid all the lines if you're a richy person.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're putting down $1,000, you should be treated like you're Mr. Richie Rich.
Yeah.
So I guess one of the other things is you get in later if you're in the public. The media people get in as early as always.
Okay.
But you get in, like, in the afternoon and evenings.
Yeah.
Or whatever's left of the evening.
Of course. That makes kind of sense, because last year it was just a total
clusterfuck.
Yeah, and then by day three, they weren't even checking badges anymore. So they could have set up a bomb and people would have died. But.
Yeah. I think we had that story of somebody managing to just get the right person guarding one of the lesser important doors. Managed to get in.
Yeah. All right. So that's a shrapnel for this week. Pat, you wanted to talk about World Warriors.
Yeah, so we've been working on a thing. Basically, what we've been doing for the last several weeks is working on a sort of unified FGC hub focused on games that have proven to stand the test of time. And one thing that, I think we're pretty much all fans of Shoryuken here. Mm-hmm. A lot of us have come up there ourselves as fighting gamers. One thing that it hasn't really done a good job of is preserving the longest-lasting games in the fighting game community and keeping that tradition alive and keeping that history alive. And so I wanted to launch a site that would kind of serve as the other side of the coin and be an SRK-like presence, but do it entirely in the service of games like Super Turbo or Third Strike or, you know, games that have proven that they deserve to be here forever.
Mm.
And so the forums are already up. Editorial is coming together. We have a really good video library that we're working on where we'll be gathering match videos and tutorial videos to help you learn characters and even systems in the game, in the games that we'll be covering.
Mm.
And so far, it's just been a lot of construction, and we do have a little ways to go in terms of the development of some of our features, but really, everything should be at the very minimum usable in time for our April 5th launch.
Yeah.
And so I'm really excited. This is probably the most excited I've been for a project that I've worked on. And we've got a lot of really cool ideas in mind that, in both the short term and long term, hopefully this pans out. The forums are over at forums.worldwarriors.net. And as soon as April 5th gets here, we'll be opening up the rest of the site to the public, and make of it what you will. But I'm just really excited for everyone to see it.
Sounds awesome.
It's gonna be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I think to Pat's point, it looks like it's really gonna fulfill a space that's sort of been open. Sure, you can shift it, a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
In terms of the way that content is produced. And I do think, anybody that's listening to this show obviously knows that the people here care a great deal about the history of the things that we're into. And the fighting game history the fighting game community has a very rich history, which I feel has sort of been supplanted now with this, whole pop-off culture and yep. with everybody kind of having this attitude. Like, one of the things that I've talked about is that the fighting game community now sort of feels like the Disney Channel. It's just a bunch of people trying to be pop stars. Like, they're not actually interested in what they're there for. They're just like, I can do something like this and become internet famous, and then that'll lead me to something else. And it kind of shits on the whole reason most people play this stuff in the first place.
Yeah. And that's actually one of the audiences that I want World Warriors to appeal to is that pre-Street Fighter 4 SRK crowd.
Hmm.
The people that that went to SRK between like 2000 and 2008. And, I want to have a website there that has a similar kind of presence, a similar kind of atmosphere. The aesthetic of the forums is not accidental. For those who have seen the message boards that we have up, that's not an accident. I specifically looked for something that was as close as I could get to that old SRK look. And we do have a long way to go with it. We're obviously very early in the design stage of the site, but I'm really excited. Lee, I did link you to the library.
Yeah.
What did you think of that?
Looks good, man. And I think it's I gotta say, like, on a completely, well, this is sort of related. I love the fact that you're doing this. Like, I really do. Like, there is a, like, what you're talking about with, like, the pre-SRK folks from, like, 2008, there's such a distinction between the people that were there before and the people that came after, and not as in, like, one group is better than another, right. But more along the lines of people are playing for different reasons. And the majority of the people that were, like, you know, the 2000s to the 2008 crowd, a bunch of them that I know don't even go to SRK anymore. Like, they're doing this stuff on Facebook and all of this other stuff. So there's a – this might be the old man fighting game for them, for lack of a better term. But, no, I think it's really cool, and I'll definitely be talking to you about how I can contribute with the the way that my life is currently working. But I would love to be able to help out some because, you know, I – was a super modded SRK for a very long time, and particularly with the, you know, a lot of the forum direction, I helped shape a lot of what happened there.
I certainly wouldn't mind you taking that role here at World Warriors.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we'll definitely talk offline about this.
Yeah.
Okay, so stay tuned for that. Also, April 5th is not a not an accident.
No.
Mm-mm.
Anyway. Next up, Nintendo finally reveals what the My Nintendo Switch rewards are going to be, and they're starting in March.
Okay.
Basically you're going to be able to use your Switch point, your reward points to buy stuff on the Switch now, so...
Yeah, instead of the way the current system works,
getting the website out of it.
Yeah, you get, like, if you bought a $60 game, you got 60 gold points. Which could be used just for very basic rewards like discounts, wallpaper, themes, nothing really all that substantial unless one of the discounted items was something you wanted. Mm-hmm. But now you're going to be able to apply that stuff to games, though we're still waiting on details.
So Nintendo's trying to do something actually modern?
Yeah.
Well, because we know they don't even know what sales means, but if you can actually, like, well, okay.
Yeah, so it seems like you'll be able to use this stuff to, technically get a discount in that you'll be able to apply it towards purchases. It seems like for every purchase you make, you'll get 5% of that in gold points. 5% worth of it, so like $3 worth of it in for a $60 game, less for the others. We still don't really have details on if that's every game or specific ones. It seems like they'll probably offer ways to redeem those points for an entire game or a DLC on the My Nintendo site.
Mm.
But... yeah, other than that, we're still kind of waiting on details on that. But it's supposed to start up early March, I'm guessing, in the one-year anniversary of the Switch.
We already knew that we'd get less credit for physical games when registering them. But The main thing that you got to look out for is that these points do expire within a year of you registering your game. I don't know when it'll happen in March, but I hope it's early March because the system came out on March 3rd. So if you registered all your games on launch, you fucked yourself.
Yeah, though it seems like it should be a lot easier to spend that since you can just throw those points onto a purchase.
Yeah.
So it'd be kind of like some stuff like Best Buy has. Like, though you had to reach at least like $5 worth for a gift card code for that. So it seems like it might be a little bit more flexible. It's not as good as what the Wii U Digital Deluxe program, I think it was called, that you got if you got the more expensive version of the Wii U, where you got essentially 10%, but you had to build that up to $5 worth of credit. To redeem, you just got like a $5 code for the eShop that you redeemed.
Yeah.
So it's like a nice thing to get, like in addition to your normal purchases. But
I mean, I think it's great they're doing this, but this sort of reminds me of like getting happy when a toddler like colors in the lines. Like, this is great that you can do this, but this kind of just so hard to give them credit, man. Like, this is like 2008 shit, but.
Yeah, though I would say at least just from the details we have on this, it's at least a lot better than what Microsoft's Xbox Live Rewards is.
Yeah.
Which requires a lot of spending money.
Yeah.
Like, no one else either have to spend like at least $300 a year on games to qualify for the cashback, or you have to participate in the specific promotions of like spend, you know, $50 on a game on the Xbox store, and then play it and earn achievements and then buy other shit you don't really want. It's like a lot of weird investment in specific titles.
Yeah.
It's like the only ones I do is just on free to play games, which is like just go play these. It's like, okay, I can do that. I don't get the huge amount of reward out of it because I don't think I've gotten any of those reward points put into my account as credit in probably about a year. Because you also get like 250 of them for doing a survey. You have to do at least like 20 of those to get a full $5 to put into your account.
Yeah.
So that's just ridiculous.
I still miss the physical shit, though. Like, back in the GameCube era, when they had a code with every game to just register, I remember, like, getting cool things like statuettes. Mm-hmm. And, like, those things right now are worth, like, $100 each. So,
no, and even the rewards that they gave then for that stuff, like, we must have bought, I'm looking at, like, two of them right now. We got, like, five of those 18-game 3DS card cases. We've got posters.
Oh, yeah, those are awesome.
Yeah, all that stuff was great. Like, that was one way Nintendo differentiated themselves. And then now they're doing a shitty version of a reward system.
Yeah, like I was more inclined to buy a Nintendo game physically during that time. Now it's like, whatever.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it was always great when you bought one used and the code card worked. You're like, hell yeah, I get another poster.
Yeah, somebody didn't go in and just steal all of them?
Yeah, I actually went to GameStop to open some cases.
Yeah, so you're that asshole.
I knew one of y'all would tell on yourselves. I knew it.
Well, okay, since Dan Reb already added himself, I'll say that I used to borrow things from the library, and I would put in the codes if they left me in a case.
You know, this is...
I mean, no one knew what they were, so...
No!
Whatever.
Listen to this justification. Guys are animals.
But you know, the funny thing is that the games are better now than they were back then, so...
At least you don't have to answer those stupid surveys to get the
points. That is
true. That was annoying, where it was just like, so, on a scale of 1 to 5, it's like, fuck you.
Now they just email you, like, a survey thing, and you can do it for, like, extra points, but you already get the purchase points out of it. It's like,
The surveys always felt, like, so genuine, too. Like, you always sit there and, like, wondered, like, no one's actually going to read this. But I remember there were a couple of times where I gave some serious feedback on there. Like, I showed I bought the game. You sons of bitches better listen to me. They're lucky they didn't have one of those cards in Breath of the Wild. I'd probably still be writing them. And I bought that game, like, what, March?
Yeah. I think I got to the point where I had autofill responses to everything.
Oh, yeah.
I had my own for me.
Well, and the profiles, just like NA, too.
NA just... No, I don't give a shit. Just give my points. Occasionally I'd be just like, fuck, give me a Kirby game. I don't care if this is Mario or whatever.
Yeah, put in the old Fire Emblem in there. Please don't make it so I can pet people.
Along the same lines, Nintendo Switch Online is coming in September.
A little bit behind schedule there, but...
Yeah. Do we know... Anything about it, though?
It's $20 a year.
Yep. Somehow their virtual console is going to tie into it.
Yeah, whatever they're going to call it. I assume they're going to probably have a different name for it. But yeah, they announced the first titles.
Back.
Super Mario Brothers 3, Balloon Fight, and Dr. Mario with... I think those latter two have an online play?
Oh,
or is it just Dr. Mario?
They cannot choose a more boring set of titles. It's not like people own like 12 copies of Mario 3 across all their systems.
Well, one of the most popular games online
mode's about.
And the most popular one of the most popular games on the sale charts is that arcade version of Super Mario Brothers. That just continues to be one of the top sellers.
I believe it.
Well, no, that one actually never sold on another console. This is the first time, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, well, the arcade version is different than what you got on the NES.
So that one...
It's called an NES. Let's not start this again.
Okay. No, seriously? It's NES. It will always be NES.
You shut your dirty Canadian mouth.
It's the NES.
It's the Nintendo Entertainment System, gentlemen.
And okay, who is the main protagonist in Earthbound?
The Nintendo Entertainment System. I mean, you'd know that if you played the game, Phil. Why are you asking me such a dumb question?
His name is Ness with two
S's. Yeah, he has two S's.
Yeah, but it's not capital letters.
It's not Nintendo Entertainment System.
No, it's Nintendo Entertainment Super System.
That's right. This is why we keep you out of the U.S., Phil.
Wow.
Well, I don't know, man. I think he's gone over on us. So, little laughing up there in Canada, moving his mustache around.
You gotta fix that bad habit before you can come back over here.
Yeah.
I'm sure
mispronouncing SNES is a reason to be deported now. I'm sure that's on the list somewhere.
Well, deport me, because we used to call it a sneeze.
Oh my god.
I don't even know where we would put you, Teresa. That's just terrible.
You could put me right in Toronto. That would be all right.
Yeah.
We'll send you out to, I don't know, Newfoundland? Where's the weird part of Canada?
Alberta.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Where's that the part of Canada that doesn't have free health care?
We don't have that part.
Damn it.
Even if you live up near the North Pole?
Yep.
Still good. Alberta is trying, but it ain't happening.
No. So,
as much as you know how much you've disappointed Santa Claus.
See, for those who don't know, Alberta is to Canada what Texas is to us in the U.S.
Yeah.
Or like Montana or something like that.
For the same reason.
They have bigger stakes.
So, pronunciation aside, moving on, we've got...
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
Of a very interesting game. It's a My Little Pony-inspired fighting game that looks far better than it has any right to.
Yeah, the story of how this game came about is actually pretty interesting in and of itself. Originally, it was, in fact, a fan game... like a fighting game based on My Little Pony Friendship is Magic, back when that, you know, was like the thing everybody was talking about on the internet.
Yep.
Then Hasbro stepped in, even though I was pretty sure this game was completely free and wasn't going to be like, huh?
It was.
Yeah. It wasn't going to be made for profit or anything, but then Hasbro said in a nope, screw you, so that got slapped down, but then they got contacted by Lauren Faust, who everyone knows, she was the main showrunner for the first couple of seasons on Friendship is Magic, and she actually offered to create completely original characters for them. Mm-hmm. So she came in, and then that's what they've been working on. They've been developing this game for the last couple of years.
They went to Indiegogo. They got $600,000 of funding.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's coming out February 22nd on the PC. And the name is Them's Fighting Herds, by the way.
Yeah.
I can't even be mad at that name. That's fantastic.
You shouldn't be mad at it ever. The entire project sounds freaking awesome.
Slow your roll down there, sneeze.
There's a trailer
you can watch if you want.
Yeah.
I
wouldn't say it's an ARC systems level game, but it does look fairly competent. So I actually want to give it a try.
Then again, if ARC Systems got a hold of that license.
Oh, dear. Then things would get really weird. That's kind of.
I can just picture Maury sitting at his workstation, giggling like an ether junkie.
So finally, our big topic of the week: Evo 2018. The games have been announced.
Wow. I mean, it's probably the safest Evo lineup ever. But my God, there's a lot to unpack, a lot of storylines that have kind of played out over the last year.
Mm. I mean, can you really call it safe with three ARK games?
Yeah.
That's a risk to me.
Well, one of them is probably the most mainstream fighting game around right now.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, well, the ones that should be of no surprise to anybody, Street Fighter V Arcade Edition is up there. Tekken 7 is also up there. What else is not really of it surprising to anybody? Well, no, everything else is kind of interesting. Then we got the ARK games. You got Guilty Gear Xrd Rev 2, followed by BlazBlue Cross Tag Battle. That one's interesting because of its timing.
Yes. It's barely going to have been out for a month as of Evo.
Yeah.
In fact, it might not even be out for a month as of... No, it's coming out end of May in Japan, start of June in the U.S., so...
Yeah.
So yeah, it'll have been a month. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that can be some of the most entertaining as well.
Yeah.
But I would also put it on the list of games that are least likely to come back next year.
Yeah. Then there's Dragon Ball FighterZ, which should be of no surprise to anybody.
Yeah, that is a slam dunk.
Yeah.
Interesting item of note here. Lead producer Tomoko Hiroki is going to be entering the tournament. Mm-hmm. So that's not something that happens very often, but
when that she's does really happen, making an effort. What's the success rate?
A producer's never gone on to win, if that's what you mean.
Mm.
Did they do well?
I doubt they ever went two and out, if that's what you're wondering. I'm honestly not sure of the actual numbers.
Gotcha. I forget whether it was Evo, but I remember there was one year where Bill Trennan from Nintendo entered for Smash and then ended up not playing.
Yeah, he entered and then things came up and he wasn't able to participate. I think there was one year that Mori entered BlazBlue, but I could be wrong about that. But yeah, this will be interesting to see. She's really been putting every effort into promoting this game, and so it's no surprise that much to see her participate competitively.
Yep.
It'll be interesting to see how she does.
Yep.
So, but I think the inclusion of Dragon Ball FighterZ is a wake-up call to Capcom to really do some soul-searching regarding Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
It would be
yes.
a real shame if they left it like this.
Yeah.
Because despite the esports video controversy... despite the grumblings about the roster, it is a very good fighting game, all told. And so hopefully they can right the ship and get this game going again because it deserves it.
Well, and I think it also is also just – it's also good lordly. I think it also has to do with the fact that, you know, with the direction Marvel is trying to do all of their properties, I definitely don't think that helped. When you have a – group of people who are used to having things like MSP in the game, Magneto, Storm, Cyclops, you know, whatever. Psylocke, excuse me, Cyclops. Jesus, I need to lay down. But anyway, no. When so much of the identity of the first three Marvel games and the games that came before it with, you know, X-Men versus Street Fighter or X-Men Children of the Atom and all that, when the identity of those games, the core of it started with the X-Men, and then you don't have hardly any of those characters in Infinite, you know, that's just one of those things where it feels like Capcom, if they could have, should have fought harder because, yes,
yeah.
we know Marvel wants to kill the X-Men because of Fox and all that. Exactly. But at the same time, you know, the identity of these games is intrinsically linked with those characters, and to remove yep. them, you know,
the
and like I feel
one was X-Men versus Street Fighter.
Yeah. And I feel bad for Peter Rosas. Just full disclosure, Peter's a friend of mine. We don't talk very often, but I've known him for a while. We've gotten together at, you know, multiple tournaments and things like that. And I remember he caught a lot of shit for his comment about, like, you know, essentially we can make these characters. I don't remember what the exact phrasing was, but he basically said, you know, at the end of the day, the way the characters look or who they are isn't really relevant. It's just the way that they play. And a lot of people had a really strong reaction to that because they were like, you know, it really can't be Magneto if it doesn't look like Magneto, or, you know, like that kind of stuff. And I think that was them just operating within the fact that definitely seems like Marvel was just like, we're not going to give you the license for these characters because we're trying to kill them off because we don't own them in the overall sense of things as far as the movie rights. And that's where all the money is. So I feel like that's an unfortunate side effect that truly hurt this game when it's not a bad game at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this year, it's not going to... It's actually the first Evo in a long time with no Marvel. Ever. Actually.
First ever.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure there'll be pickup games and stuff going around.
Oh, yeah.
The other three slots are filled in by Injustice 2. And
so there will be DC.
Yeah. So you've got DC and Marvel being, well, yeah, just DC. And then you've got a couple of Smashes.
Yep.
Melee and Smash 4. And that, to me, is another kind of slap at Infinite.
Yeah, they actually... Like
we would rather burn two slots on Smash than one on Infinite.
Burn two spots on Smash and reduce the overall roster by one from recent years. Because the last few have been 9-game rosters. This year we're down to 8. So they plugged in... 2 Smash games, and drop the roster by 1 to leave Marvel out.
Yeah, it's hard also not to feel like there's definitely a, you know, at this point, I mean, Evo is it. They're the big dick fighting game tournament. But at the same time, it's also one of these things like where, you know, as you get more involved with these sponsors and everything else like that, you know, the amount of eyes that are going to be on something becomes more and more and more important. And I feel like that's the big reason for the inclusion of the 2 Smash games, because there is just a huge clutch of Nintendo fans that will watch this stuff that, you know, they can be advertised to and everything else like that. And traditionally, that cross-section of gamers doesn't overlap with the other fighting game communities. So that's one of those things where it feels like part of the reason that Infinite, wasn't on that roster was because in the game, you know, overall isn't that popular. But number two is also because what can they trade up for that? What's going to get more eyes? What's going to get more views? What's going to, you know, generate more everything for this tournament, you know, then the buzz and everything behind it. So it's hard for me not to look at that as somebody that's been involved in planning tournaments and running tournaments for, God, 20 years now. That's definitely a component.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's not going to happen this year, but I actually wouldn't be too surprised to see maybe an Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite be announced maybe next year, you know.
It's also being left out of Capcom Cup, so that's about as damning as it gets.
Yeah. I think Capcom wants to move on with that one, and, you know, I think they're actually looking for a quick rev rather than try to save it with DLC.
Yeah, they want to take a mulligan.
Because the amount of DLC that they would have to release to fix this game? You'd
probably be okay. 2 seasons all at once, I would say.
Yeah.
Just drop 12 characters in there and do some across-the-board rebalancing.
Yeah.
And then if you drop 12 characters in there, only 5 of them could be Marvel, so pick very wisely.
Yeah.
Mm.
So that's the games. You think it's time for them to maybe start looking at a format change?
Yes, and it looks like it's in the works. They're opening up a side stage this year for key side tournaments to run their top 8s on and get some extra stream time and everything. I think that's just the first step in a process that will ultimately lead Evo to having a main stage, side stage dynamic. They're already kind of going in that direction by not having 3 of their games on Sunday. So now it's just a matter of taking those 3 games that aren't going to be on Sunday, grouping them together with all of the side tournaments that they're going to be featuring, and then officially recognizing those side tournaments as part of Evo. We're already seeing formats like that at events like Frosty Faustings and Final Round, things like that. Mm. So I think it's only a matter of time before Evo kind of takes that step, because it would solve so many problems, especially now. part of the reason being that it would kind of protect that whole historical value of Evo, which I'm not sure is important to them, but it's important to elements in the community. So it would be a very good olive branch in that regard. I also think it would be a way to take the heat off the Smash community, because suddenly their presence would not be at the expense of any other communities. So that would even calm me down a little bit, and that's saying something. But the revolving door of featured games at Evo has kind of broken all ties to the history of the scene. And if there was a way to bring more games into the official lineup and bring back games like Super Turbo or Third Strike, or, you know, even a Street Fighter 4, Ultra Street Fighter 4, maybe get some games like Vampire Savior that never really had a chance originally, and, you know, build upon that, I think could go a long way toward a more unified fighting scene.
Yeah.
And it seems like the seeds are kind of being planted for that this year with the side stage being opened up. But I do think they need to find a way to include more official tournaments in Evo, because things have just gotten, I feel, too divisive now to ignore the situation much longer.
So there we are.
Mm-hmm.
Evo in a nutshell. It's going to be interesting to watch what they do. You know, I think the fact that they don't have any legacy games in there at all is still kind of disconcerting for me.
Yeah, I mean, we've gone without Super Turbo since 2011, I want to say. That's not,
not
good.
Those games aren't still being played.
It's not like those games aren't still evolving. I mean, we've seen a pretty major overhaul of the top tiers in Super Turbo just in the last couple of years.
Right. So, yeah, part of me wonders if maybe Evo shouldn't do a splinter tournament.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know, call it B3.
Well, they've already done that, but...
yeah, but you get the idea. Just go back to the kind of roots that they started
with. B-Series.
Yeah, the B-Series. Wouldn't be
bad
with Michael Bay, because it would...
No.
You get the point.
Maybe the Evo Legacy Series.
Yeah.
Something like that.
The Evo Classic.
Yeah.
Invitation.
Mm.
So we will wait with bated breath to see what develops from there.
Yeah.
So moving on, we have our picks of the week to round out the show for this week, which is good, because I think my voice is about to give out on me. So I'll start with mine, and it is 640 minutes of glorious Commodore C64 SID music.
Wow.
So, yes, you can go to that site, you can download it, or you could watch the video on YouTube. So, and understand why the C64 SID is such a well-revered sound chip, because nothing sounds like it. nothing sounds like it now or since. So, yeah, check that out. It's free, and it's great. If you like old game music.
Well, continuing the musical theme, Event Hub's just posted 45-second clips of the upcoming Street Fighter V Blanca and Falke themes. And I'm a fan. I like the mixing done on these, and I'm definitely going to, you know, once the full themes are available, have them on my regular playlist at work, for sure.
Mm.
But, the previews, I've got the link right there in the show notes. Definitely recommend checking them out.
Yep. Is there a specific arcade edition soundtrack that's available somewhere?
There will be.
Yeah.
But it's not going to have the entirety of Season 3 because of the point at which it's going to be released. Yeah. It will stop with Blanca and Falke. Okay. So, Cody, G, and Sagat will not be on it.
Hmm. Brandon?
Yeah, well, continuing further the music theme, this week we finally got to hear a bit of the new theme song for Kingdom Hearts 3 from Hikaru Utada. It's called Don't Think Twice. It's actually pretty nice. Give it a look. Give it a listen.
Hmm.
Right. Remember that the game is supposed to come out this year, so
supposed to.
Yeah, supposed to being the operative phrase here.
That out, Danrib, I think. Yes.
Yeah, Yakuza Kiwami, the Steelbook Edition, is available for $15 at Best Buy. That's 12 with GCU if you have it. It's a great launching point if you ever want to get into Yakuza, especially since it was, since 6 was just delayed. So, yeah. And I believe a few months ago they were reprinting the other sequels. So, not a bad get.
Cool.
Also, if you don't have GCU and if Yakuza is not your thing, Golf Story is also discounted to $12 on the eShop and the Switch. So, good game to
get on that.
Teresa?
Rise and Fall expansion for Civ 6 for the people who are into that. It is not cheap because it just came out, but it is full price.
How much
it
is it?
Available. $30. So if anybody,
an expansion.
If anybody wants to throw $30 at me, I'd buy it, but I have not bought it yet. Also, for people who like The Sims, I just saw that Sims 4 and a lot of stuff, they're like 40% off in the Xbox store, so Microsoft store.
Nice. All right, and Lee.
Yeah, I am. I'm gonna kind of mirror what I said earlier. I definitely think Shadow of the Colossus is definitely where it's at. And anybody that played the old game, the old version of it's worth picking up. Or if you know you just want an entirely unique experience, you know it's definitely worth picking up. There's not really anything out there like it. I can't recommend it enough. It's a very unique game. I can't think of anything else or any other way to describe it.
All right. And finally, Chris.
Yeah, so there's some good sales this week. Nintendo specifically has some indie sales on their Switch eShop. Things like Golf Story, which I believe Brandon would definitely recommend.
Mm-hmm.
It's $12 on sale. See, Rocket League is also on sale. All of its DLC as well. That's $15. Let's see. Retro City Rampage DX is $10. Neon Chrome, $10.49. That's pretty good. The weird Spelunker Party thing is $15. It's half off. I might actually check that out. Maybe not. I don't know. The Harmonix's Beat Sports is on sale as well. $12. There's some nice stuff here that people that just got Switches over the holidays might need some new stuff to play. There's some good stuff here. PSN also has some good stuff on sale. This week it's mainly Ubisoft and Namco, and specifically Namco's anime stuff. So all their Naruto games, Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Saint Seiya, Tales, Sword Art Online, all their other anime stuff, Dot Hack. There's some good stuff here. I don't know which of the Tales games are the best ones to recommend. Brandon probably would have some good recommendations.
As far as the Tales games are concerned?
Yeah. Yeah, there's like 800 on sale. And it's hard to parse that stuff.
Pretty much start with, if you can, start with Trails in the Sky and then go with Trails of Cold.
Tales.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, pretty much all of them are worth playing at least once. I would start with Tales of Symphonia if it's on there.
And the collection. It's on the PS3.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go for that one.
Okay.
That'll be a good start.
Yeah. There's a bunch of stuff here. The Ubisoft stuff has some pretty good deals. The Rayman Legends is $10. That's one to get if you're into, need some good 2D platformers. I believe The Crew is pretty good there. $15 for the Ultimate Edition, I believe, has all of the expansions. Maybe a good way to sort of get into that before the sequel comes out at some point. I don't know when that's happening, actually. Fractured But Whole, South Park, that's $30. That's a pretty good price for that. As we talked about last week, right after they basically ended the deal on getting the Stick of Truth for free with it. So that was nice timing on Ubisoft's part to say, hey, here it's free, but you're not, here it's cheap, but you're not getting the other free thing with it. Mm. Yeah, Watch Dogs 2 is
Didn't they just announce, or am I misremembering this, but aren't they talking about bringing the Fractured Butthole to the Switch?
I don't know if
I've heard
that, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Mm.
Okay. It's, yeah, that game should be easily doable on a Switch. Yeah. Watch Dogs 2 is $20. That game's really good. Especially the way you just fuck around with the AI in that game. Yeah, there's some good stuff there. And I think the last thing I had to talk about is Mercenary Kings Reloaded. So that developer finally got around to bringing that to Vita, but they also did some upgrades to it, added some new items and missions and some other characters to it. That game is from the people at the Scott Pilgrim. It very much has that similar kind of art style, though here it's a bit more Metal Slug style. So it's like, hey, what if Metal Slug, but with Monster Hunter style quests and mechanics to it. So you're taking down these big mechs and creatures and such, but you're getting like different crafting materials to improve your own items and all that. One of the nice things is this was free for PS Plus early on in the PS4's life. With the release of the Vita version and it being cross-buy, you can grab it for free again to get both versions, and it will unlock it from the PS Plus requirement, essentially making it free for good. Hmm. There are a number of games that have done that as they release other versions later on, like Resogun. There's a couple of tables for Zen Pinball that I have. They have the same thing where I also got five versions of it because it was PS3, PS4, Vita. Hmm. And like the Star Wars Pinball that came out on PS3 and Vita. It's like five sets of trophies you could earn for that stuff if you wanted to play it that much. Yeah, yeah, there's some cool stuff with that. And this game... certainly get a nice... it's releasing at a nice time when people are really into Monster Hunter and saying, hey, here's a cool thing, like what if Metal Slug was Monster Hunter as well? Mm. And it looks real good. It's kind of fun, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. So, we got a show for today.
Yeah.
Just in time, too. So, yeah. Remind everybody to check us out at smashpad.com or, if you like, at facebook.com/smashpad because we're there, too. Mm. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, or your favorite podcast aggregator. So, with that, I am Filippo D'Alfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Daniel Victoria.
I'm Chris Sologi.
I'm Teresa Sammons.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
See you next week.